welcome to Taking in the Scene, the greatest podcast of all time.
Of all times,
in all universes, in the multiverse. I am so excited today for this episode. We've got a very special guest with us. I'm going to let Orange introduce them. I will say that Denzel is not recording with us today. He is off doing a biathlon. So he is
a biathlon?
Yeah, biathlon. He just recently got into skiing and shooting at the same time.
Shooting? Oh my gosh.
That's what a biathlon is. Isn't that weird?
Wait, skiing? Are you serious?
Yeah, a biathlon is skiing and shooting guns. Just to be clear with our listeners, I am joking.
Okay.
Denzel is not into biathlons. We're just making up reasons why he's not recording with us today. But as ever, I am Mango Sorbet. I am joined by my amazing co-host.
Orange. Hey, y'all.
Orange, who are we joined by today?
We are joined by the... I was going to say illustrious because that's the word on the tip of my tongue.
They are illustrious.
The illustrious Catnip.
Woo!
So Catnip is a 65-year-old gender fluid person who has been active in the Triangle NC queer kink community for about 5 years now. They use they, them pronouns. And they are polyamorous, partnered, and a collared pet of their adored one.
Which is, by the way, a great, I don't know what you would call it if it
like,
was
like
a
tagline.
Yeah, great way honorific. To refer honorific. There I don't know if it's an honorific for you, but I love it.
Oh, which part?
Adored one. I just
the
think adored.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very
and then,
we'll
then,
talk about that.
Yes.
Completing the bio outside of the kink life, they are in training and marketing for some major tech thing, and they play the mandolin in a group.
Acoustic.
Wait.
It's called a band. It's a thing called a band.
A group? You seem so confused by what a band is.
Well, because I saw the word mandolin and I wanted to ask a bunch of questions about because I love mandolins. Like, I don't know why I love mandolins, but
Well, let's save that for the next episode.
Okay.
We'll bring them back.
It's one of my fetishes. Kind of, no, it's kind of a big deal. No, I'm joking.
The only mandolin I like is in the kitchen. People who cook will get that joke.
Google has a terrible time with it. Yeah.
Yes.
That joke has like three levels to it, though. It's like the... Oh, my gosh.
Continue, please.
And performing around the region. There we go. Okay.
There we go. We've made it through the bio. Welcome, Catnip.
I am so happy to be here. Thank
we
you for
so
having
happy
me.
To have you.
I'm a huge fan of the podcast, so it's such a delight to be
fan.
On here. Yeah, I'm the one.
We've got at least one fan. Yeah.
I write both of the fan letters that you get and the hate.
Oh my gosh, yes.
the
just
fan
so
and
keep
the hate.
It balanced.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to keep us grounded.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm, I appreciate
indeed,
that.
Indeed.
It's just one's duty as a fan.
Yeah. I really appreciate that. Well, we're excited to ask you some questions today. The theme of today's podcast interview is going to be around being an older adult in kink. Actually, the reason we're doing this episode is because last season we had someone listen to the podcast and say, like, hey, I'd love to hear about the perspective of someone who's older in kink. I don't really feel represented in your podcast because the three of you are, you know, like youngish people. Mm. And I was like, that's a really good point. I have no perspective.
We are whippersnappers.
We are young whippersnappers. And I just don't have the perspective of being, someone over 60 in kink, especially these days. And we're really looking forward to hearing your perspective.
Well, I hope I represent all of us well.
And the truth is,
no pressure.
You won't represent everyone. No one person can represent any group, but it's,
absolutely.
I think it's nice to be able to reflect.
Well, I mean, but I represent multitudes. So I feel like I could totally represent at least myself.
Okay. Catnip, just so you know, it's very welcome on this podcast to make fun of Orange. So if you need to at any point.
A tradition.
Feel free to rib away.
I'm going to feel so at home.
Good.
Yay.
Orange, would you like to kick us off?
Yes. So Catnip, what is the approximate age that you entered the kink scene?
I guess it would be, in one sense, that's hard to answer because I feel like I've always been kinky going back to childhood.
Snaps.
I had, you know, there were things that just clicked with me, and 60s TV serials and movies and things like that, when the hero would get tied up or something like that. It was like some little thing was pitter-patting in my heart and I didn't understand it, but it made me feel warm and fuzzy. Mm-hmm. But really coming into as a practice, it was something that I experimented with from time to time over the years, but being in the sociocultural group I was with which was conservative Christianity, I would say maybe conservative religion, but the catnip out of the bag. I would quickly be consumed with guilt and go back in that closet too. But
honestly, Christianity just ruins everything.
Oh God. There's another whole podcast subject.
Yep.
That we can do.
We can get into it. Trauma.
We can tiptoe around it just a little bit because
if we have time at the end, we can talk about sure. all of our religious
and I'm,
trauma.
I'm fine with talking about it.
That's wonderful.
But yeah, so like about the last 5 years is when I had left all of that behind. I was free in a lot of ways in my life that I hadn't been before. I had come out as queer. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And living
Welcome.
Where it's so good to be here.
Yeah.
So good. I am so home. But living where we do in the Triangle of North Carolina, mm-hmm. and especially mm-hmm. in Durham, where I live, there is just a lot of queer presence and a lot of kink presence as I came to eventually find. And so I lucked out being in a place that was good to be birthed into. So roughly 5 years ago is when I got like fully active.
What was the kick in the pants?
It's an interesting thing to say in a kink.
for all
my
our...
first kink in the pants.
Yeah,
was,
when was your first
was during
kink
a
in the pants?
Scene.
What was your first CBT?
But first kick in the pants. Like, what do you mean by
what
that?
What got you? You said 5 years ago. What was the? What you
oh,
were,
okay.
It
so
was 5 years ago today, and you were like, "I'm doing it."
Yeah, I think we've been talking about this. Like, I had, during the time before that, when I was really starting to become free and guilt free to be able to do like that, I was doing Craigslist hookups, which now I look back and I'm absolutely horrified because I was a total bottom sub, which means I was going to mostly strange men's houses and letting them tie me up, you know. What was I thinking? But I was just like so desperate to experience things. But the kick in the pants in the right direction, as it were, when I discovered there's a thing called a kink community. Mm. And I wish I could remember. I don't know. It probably was joining FetLife.
Yeah.
You know, finding FetLife, joining FetLife, and then seeing, oh, there's events. Events?
Yeah. For all our complaints about FetLife.
Right. Yeah. It was the exposure.
Which it is possible for both to be true. Right. FetLife can be great for organized events and awful for a whole bunch of other things. But before we get back to the FetLife, the FetLife discourse, can we talk more about that Craigslist thing and like how it inspired your exploration of kink? Because you mentioned like creepy basements and like rope.
I didn't hear the word basement mentioned, but okay.
There were basements and they were creepy.
I assume.
Craigslist. They were creepy basements.
I do want to say though, I hear you when you say like, what was I thinking? But the truth is, given what you've already said about like coming from this conservative religious background and not being connected to the community, which is, you know, what a conservative religious background does. It cuts you off from community. Mm-hmm. It makes sense that you were like grasping to have your needs met. And I just, I want to tell you in this space, there's no shame for the things that you did.
For sure. Correct.
And I don't judge you at all. I hope others don't as well. Because
I appreciate that.
We've all been desperate.
And I should probably clarify when I was saying like, what was I thinking? It was more just from the safety aspect, which, you know, your podcast emphasizes, and we certainly should, that, you know, in what we do, safety, consent, things like that are so important, so paramount. And these were experiences mostly with people that are not part of our community.
Mm. Right, right.
They're solopreneurs, as it were, you know, like I was, being out there alone. And not all of them, I'm not saying they were all bad intended, but in a lot of cases, you know, they just didn't have the knowledge or the training or safe practice and things like that. And just the fact of, as I said, like going to a strange person's house and letting them restrain you in a way that, like, now whatever they do, that's it. And,
right,
you know, obviously I live to tell about it.
Well, I mean, the benefit of a community is that you learn how to vet, and you learn what questions to ask, and you learn, like, oh, this person might not be safe. And without the benefit of a community, how would you know that?
Exactly, right? So it, you know, it changed everything. I mean, I met some great people during the Craigslist days. It wasn't, you know, I don't want to portray that it was all negative or scary, or I wouldn't have kept doing it. And I didn't, I had some weird and not pleasant experiences, but thankfully, okay, nothing overly dangerous. I, you know, unfortunately, but I met some wonderful people too. I, you know, had a couple of guys who became play friends for a while, for a period of time, and then moved away or whatever, you know, things changed.
Right.
But it was that was my first taste in, like, there can be a relationship in this, which was different than just a physical, you know, going out and getting a physical experience.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, like, I do want to acknowledge the fact that, like, just like you are, just kind of echo that same sentiment that, yes, we do have that sentiment of, like, the Craigslist killer and all this other stuff. But when it comes down to it, just like Backpage, Craigslist did facilitate a lot of, relatively speaking, safe adventures into that, because people could vet, people could say, hey, send me, you know, your Facebook profile. You can actually do those things, which is why I harp on so much about how dumb it is that we have these anti-porn organizations trying to take down everything.
It is infuriating.
Yeah.
It just makes
I'm really glad you brought that up, Orange, because I think it's important that, you know, when I'm talking about these things, I want to be really clear that that does make me angry, because I think sex work is legitimate. It's legitimate work.
Yeah.
And Craigslist was an important economic venue for so many people that was just robbed from them, again, by the same kind of religiously motivated thing that we were talking about earlier that robbed me of much of my life for so many decades.
Right.
I'm hearing about that. It's sad. To me, it's so unfair. And I'm sort of going off script here, but, like, what are your thoughts on being robbed of that for so long?
Well, I really try to not spend much time there, because I'm here, and it's
that makes sense.
It's so overwhelmingly wonderful now. Like, I love my life now. I feel like I'm living my best life right now. So I've come to a place where I did go through stages of anger with it, you know, probably through all the classic grief stages. Because it was a relationship that I was in for decades. It was, you know, all of my adult life up until 10, 12 years ago.
And
it was centered in that religious community and its mores and restrictions. So it's like, I do regret that. One thing that I've talked with my friends a lot about that I'm grateful for is, again, finding the community, because it's enabled me to pursue being who I am in ways that I would not have fully found otherwise. And it also has meant the community here has been so incredibly welcoming and accepting to me as an older person, you know, because the fear coming in is like, I missed it, you know, like nobody's going to want to play with this, you know, 65 year old body. So like that fear that I missed it, but like I found more than I could ever dream of.
Right. Right.
And not just in terms of, like, you know, plays and things to do, which have been certainly there, but I've found some of the best friends I've ever had, relationships, partners,
beautiful.
You know, has all come out of that. And it's been a good thing.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
I mean, as I say, for all the lows that you may have, there's a ton of extra highs because of the fact of community, you know, community, like an older sibling, causes problems. But for the most part, they care about you, I hope.
Right. It's like a family. And thankfully for us, I think in our area, it's mostly a good family.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has its moments and people and weird uncles that show up at Thanksgiving and make trouble.
Well, I mean, and speaking of like kind of people showing up and going out, like, is the kink scene today similar to when you first joined? Because, I mean, you said 5 years, so it's not like the biggest spread in the world. But because you come from that backing of like the Craigslist kind of existence, and then that was back when Craigslist personal. Oh man, that was was that 2018? The same time at Backpage, or was it Craigslist got knocked out before Backpage?
I don't remember the exact order there, but yeah, that, we're talking about Craigslist personals when I'm talking about my life before the community.
Right, right.
But I have to give, I have to do a little peeling back of the podcast curtain here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Say when Orange first contacted me and sent me a list of questions, it was kind of like, what was it back like back in the day? And I was like, oh no, Orange, this is not going to be that kind of like, I'm a 5 year old.
But honestly, even, I mean, even a few years in the community changes.
Yes. So and I have too.
5 years is a long time, actually.
I think one of the biggest things that, and maybe this is just front of mind because it's been so prominent for me as a queer person this year in our community, the one that I'm exposed to, I think, is the big influx of out queer people representation. And I think more, it's still so much more could be done, but I'm seeing more diversity in other ways too.
Well, it's part of our agenda.
I know that.
Oh my God, the gay agenda?
The queer agenda,
Oh, the gay agenda or the queer agenda?
No, we're not supposed to talk about the first one.
Right.
Okay, we talked about
that. But Disney talked about it. I feel like it was legal now. Too soon. Well, I mean, in like that kind of explosion and growth, there's some people who might have a counterpoint to that saying, there's just so many, why is everybody queer now? Oh my gosh. And it's the same concept of when back in the days of school times, when everybody had to write with their right hand and teachers would bat your hand and hit you with a ruler to make you write with your left hand. When they finally took that away, there was an influx of people writing left hand and it became a pandemic of left-handedness, if you will, until it leveled out to
left
the level
that just never existed before that. Right.
Right. Left-handed, like it's all this new phenomenon, but I think we're in the same situation. And it goes to your point of like over the last 5 years, like the acceptance of people being, you know, non-binary relational. That's a weird way to say that. Heteronormative. That's what I'm looking for. People existing outside that bubble, especially with the advent of the explosion, if you will, of the Me Too movement, especially with the movements that you've seen for people just kind of like the It Gets Better movement, the Trevor Project, stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're going to be in kink, which is already literally defined as like outside of the normative,
then
why not just truly be outside of the norm? Why try and fit into their box.
Can I share a quick story
please.
About that I think maybe indicates some please of the change do. That I've
literally
seen?
Literally why you're here. Share stories.
Yes, please.
So 5 years ago, when I kind of came out and found the community and started exploring things like that, I came out to a friend who I was in a band with at the time, who's an African-American gentleman, and he was so excited because he kind of always, he said, like, you're a person I always hoped was one of us.
Oh, nice.
A really nice thing. And long story short, like, he became my first dominant.
Oh.
We never got as far as, like, a collared relationship, like, protocol, anything like that. But that's just the way we quickly related. And so I remember going to an event early on with him in another part of North Carolina, a large event at a pretty established kink venue. And we went there with him leading me around. I'm just because podcast listeners can't see me. I'm pretty present, pretty cis white male, typical looking at that. And here's this beautiful, large African American guy leading me around on a leash and collar through the venue. And we encountered people like literally giving us looks. And
wait, good looks or bad looks?
Bad looks. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Uh oh.
Did anyone say anything?
Little like side remarks.
What
like,
about?
That, you know, kind of like that here. And we didn't know enough at the time. Like he wasn't as active in the community yet as I was. We were both kind of newbies. So like now or even a year later, I would have known at this venue, I would have known like I could have gone to somebody immediately and reported that, and that would not have been tolerated.
Right. Well, I mean, but just to go to just to defend their point, I'm just saying all my women that are in rope must be women. They must be skinny. They must be white. No, I understand like the normalization that people are so used to is like, oh, we can't see that queerness here. Oh my gosh, you're going to make me not straight anymore.
It's like, and to be fair, like we didn't know if it was the two males, which it could have been, or the mixed race, or it could be both.
Miscegenation, is that the word? Anti-miscegenation laws is laws against interracial marriage.
Yeah.
So like people are really well, it's North Carolina. I mean, never mind. I'm not surprised.
Not knowing is also quite stressful,
But we could tell like some people didn't like seeing us like that there. So that was that's experience like. That's not happening anymore here. And I think the level of, it's not that there aren't people around and even people maybe within our community who would want to feel that way, but, or want to express that kind of reaction. But the social pendulum of social pressure, I think, has shifted, you know, far enough the other way that we're, I think we've taken some clear stands on racism and misogyny and you know, homo transphobia and things like that. I have a lot of trans people. Most of my relationships have been with trans people, and they still encounter pretty frequently misgendering, something that's hard for them. I think a lot of it, or most of it, is probably unintentional, or people stumbling around, but some of it they feel is like people not giving enough care and attention to it. So that's kind of like a forefront issue, I think, that needs to be dealt with.
Oh no,
even more in our community now.
Well, I mean, and like that kind of thing takes like a lot of allyship to come in too. Like it's it's important for folks who self-identify as cis straight people like myself, that in the moment where somebody's not respecting somebody's pronouns, you need to identify as a problem, and your pronouns need to be fuck around and find out, because like it's a collective thing that we all have to come together and fight, because if we don't, we're not going to pull that pendulum back. It's going to regress. We're going to have backlash. So
Well, I have another question, but before I move on to that question, I just want to make sure, are there other things from 5 years ago that are different now before I move on from that?
I think one area is, and we still struggle with this, it's so hard, is the area of you mentioned vetting earlier and also policing for, I hate to use that term, for people that are potentially dangerous or actually dangerous, and you know, excluding them, making sure that they're not a part of our events and socials and things like that. It's still a really hard thing to do. I think
though, you're telling me.
Yeah. I think we've come some distance on that. Some very hard learned lessons. I think one thing that I've heard discussions around, and I think this is an ethos that's changing, is like there's a lot less desire for leaders in the community, for people to be leaders, you know, and people to be put up on this pedestal where you they're a leader that you look to, and more servants.
Honestly, because the people who want to be leaders are just the worst. It's like people who want to be politicians.
Again and again. Right.
It's like, oh, why do you want to be a politician?
So it's like there's one.
Narcissist.
On the note of politicians, like politicians should be public servants. That's the whole concept of being, politicians, you're politicking, so you can get elected. But you should be a public servant. Like people look at Leslie Knope from
Parks and Rec
and they laugh. But like, no, Leslie was like doing her job. Now, Tom Haverford was an asshole.
Right.
Now, Tom Haverford had a character arc that was very subtle, but it got slightly better. But
I think what you're trying to say, Orange, is that the people who we put in power should be serving our needs. And in the community, it's not a situation where we put people in power. People sort of just take it based on their access to, typically their access to resources and their proximity to privilege and power.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So the people who can throw parties, for instance, are, you know, white couples who are established and are sort of unapproachable because they're throwing parties and there aren't that many parties. So people just become, they just forgive.
Suck up to them for the, you know, the old fashioned term, right?
Yeah.
And the ascension to power is so subtle. Like there was a very specific instance to where there's somebody in our community currently who is, you know, relatively cool. Sure. they're relatively cool. Everybody wants to be around them. And then they interacted with somebody who has been ousted out of the community in a way to where basically people just flooded that person. Like, no, you're cool. We want you to stay cool. Avoid those people. And it's like, it's so silly sometimes how subtle the ascension to power, because if that person who is cool endorses somebody who is who has proximity power already, they can just start accumulating because like, hey, well, this person vouched for him, so why can't we vouch for him?
Honestly, I appreciate when people, so like, I'm not trying to like brag or anything, but like I have a following
Humble brag.
I mean, if I'm going to brag, I'll brag. I have a following on FET and I'll like stuff or comment on stuff. And I have a wonderful friend who will message me and be like, hey, so-and-so's a bad person. I'm like, cool, blocked. Because I don't want people thinking that I endorse any bad, you know, you can't, people slip through the cracks all the time, but
of course,
I don't want to endorse anyone who's shitty. Yeah. that's true. I appreciate that
I think that's a good example of how we're trying to move toward is a more community-based,
right?
Lack of a better term, approach to it rather than just depending on
honestly, that has existed for a while among like the femmes I know. And I've talked about it on the podcast before, this network we have of femme people saying like so-and-so's dangerous or I got bad vibes from so-and-so.
Yeah. Right.
And the reason it's a network and it's sort of underground is because like if I get bad vibes from someone at the Slosh, our local, you know, Slosh, I can't have them kicked out on vibes alone.
Yeah.
But I can tell absolutely everyone I'm close to that they suck. And I do that. I fully do that. I name names. I'm very, very explicit. It'd be nice if that network were.
But I see the same thing in the trans non-binary community. Because it is a very marginalized and oppressed community.
For safety.
They learn, right? They learn, like, if we don't look out for each other, nobody else is going to look out for us.
Right.
So you cross that community and it will be across the grapevine in no time at all.
And I do love that.
Oh my gosh, you guys are just canceling me because I have opinions. I'm a cis white male and I should know.
I've said this before. The term cancel culture bothers me so much.
Oh, okay.
Can't we just call it accountability culture?
Oh my, well, you know, but if you call it accountability, then they won't have arguments anymore.
That's right. That's right.
Mango, you and your slang.
Me and my language.
But so going into, I guess we talked about a mix of positive and negatives, but are there any, like, is there one specific positive evolution and one specific negative evolution that you've seen in the kink scene over your time period, specifically pertaining to the youngsters interacting with the not as youngsters? That's a weird way to say
it. I like the term older adults.
Yeah. Older adults. Okay. There you go.
Yeah. With that, since you brought that up specifically, it's something that I certainly look at and keep an eye on. And it's just happened that I've developed a lot of relationships with the younger people in the community. And I seem to be accepted by and large by them.
Oh, yay.
And I love that. And it also frightens me because I know the potential is there. When you look at a large age gap or something like that, and I'm not even talking at this point about like a, you know, partnership or relationship kind of thing. I'm just thinking like just hanging out and being friends. Like, you know, I've thought about it from time to time. I think like, you know, that catnip, he always seems to be around the 20-somethings. Yeah. What's going up with that? Have you noticed that? You know?
Yeah.
So I try to do a lot of check-in.
I'm glad you're conscious of that.
Yeah, you got to be conscious of that.
Some older adults are either blithely unaware or they're aware and they're intentional about it.
So like I go, you know, two things that I do is like, going out of my way in being careful about those relationships and what I do there and what I don't do, and checking in a lot. I've regained, I think, enough trust that and I have people there that I trust to tell me truthfully things like that. So I just check in for times. It's like, am I okay? Like, is everybody, you know, I was at this thing last Thursday night, you know, was I, you know, was I appropriate? Was I in there like that? Because it's, you know, it's something. But I think on the positive side in that topic area has been the hunger for older, experienced. I hesitate to use the term mentor because that sometimes has a particular, relational connotation in the kink community. But in the more generic sense of it.
Right.
And I get people, young people that tell me all the time, like, we look at one of the absolute nicest things that has been said to me in a long time, and more than one person says to me, but I'll pick the one in particular, is that somebody came up to me at our Slosh, and a young queer person, and said, when I see you for the first time, I feel like I could grow old and still and be who I am. Like they never, they said like, this is something, you know, they thought like, well, this will be something I do in my 20s, and you know, and I'll have to I'll have to give it up eventually or whatever because it's, you know, it's not.
I'll
it's
have
not
to start masking.
I have to get my 401k retire from kink.
So that, I mean, that is just the absolute nicest thing that anybody could say, that, you know, it basically.
So you're saying you're not kicked out of kink at 50?
No, I hope not.
Once. But I've looked at the statistical data. If you're above 50, you're either 100 years old. No, I'm joking. Yeah.
And, you know, that, there's a point there. It's like because there are, you know, I've been told by other people in my, in my age group, you know, that, well, it's just, you know, you're not going to get, you know, nobody wants to play with older people. And so you're going to get, you know, you're not going
to
get
people
much.
People have said that to you in and your age group?
Other people in my age group have said that, you know, as their, as their,
they're jealous,
their perception.
That's what they are.
Maybe I didn't want to say it that way, but
basically, Catnip is like, I'm a big deal. Okay. No.
Joke. Anyone who tries to bring you down and tries to make you insecure is because they insecure.
Well, yeah, I know. But it's like, I think like, that's so sad because it's not ultimately about your age.
Right.
It's about who you are.
No, exactly.
And, you know, people, younger people that I'm with all the time tell me that, you know, we really don't, you know, of course, when we look at you physically, we see, you know, we don't forget you're an older person, but like, we don't perceive you that way. We don't, you know, like you're one of us. You're, you know, you're part of our community. And
that's great.
It's a fantastic thing to discover my age. I didn't miss it. You know,
that's the nice thing. You didn't miss it.
I wake up some mornings and I'm almost crying with joy because it's like, I didn't miss it.
No. Oh, can you imagine all the people who did miss it or who are still stuck in these boxes?
I have friends who have confided in me, like people who are, you know, cis, straight, monogamous, you know, not that there's anything wrong with it.
Right.
But, you know, that.
You don't have to lie here. Those dirty monogs. Yeah.
They're correct. There's nothing wrong with monogamy.
They don't listen to this podcast.
To our listeners, I'm kidding. We love the monogamous people.
Yeah. But I have had...
I see your fingers crossed under there.
I've had that type of person who's been like, come to me in private and say, I envy you.
Right.
And there's part like they realize like they're in a situation where they feel trapped.
Right.
And even though they, you know, they love their mate, their partner, they'll, you know, they're okay with the life that they have with that. They see that there's something that they'll never, they're okay.
Yeah.
And they've settled for okay.
And just to, sorry, go ahead.
Orange.
Well, I'll say just to echo off that too, like I've definitely interacted with people over time to where I've observed that everybody's kind of at a similar base level when they first come into the kink scene. So to be a little bit less vague and a little bit more specific, there was a person that I was partnered with a while ago. They were an older person, and long story short, when it came to like sexual things, there was a lot of inexperience from their side, and it took me aback for a second because I was like, "Am I the more experienced one in the situation?" You know, not to brag about my skills or anything, I was just pretty amazing, but all that said and done is like,
it's
one of those things. Cause like for that person, there might be an immense amount of pressure, an immense amount of like, you know, negative connotation of like, oh no, this younger person is more experienced than I am. And like, I just feel like that's like an unspoken thing, I guess, that people don't think about is like, if you're brand new and you're doing something for the first time and you're older, society defaults you to being the wiser one. Mm-hmm. When in reality, you might just be brand new. And some people let that go to the head, especially when it comes to rope. Let me tell you, I've seen some bad rope tires who are older, and I'm like, please, for the safety of this person, stop doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Learn. Yeah.
But
learn.
Anyway,
if I can say any,
go ahead.
If I can say anything to, you know, any of the one or two other older listeners that you might still have, it would be that you know, be open to all the people in the community. And learn from, like, I learned so much from younger people in our community who, whether or not they're more experienced and something like that, they know more, that often is the case. Absolutely. You know, in all the different skill areas and things like that, there's tons of stuff I don't know anything about.
Yeah. Right.
A little about. But also in terms of just life experiences and what they experience and what they go through. I'm very excited to be around this younger generation because they are who I wish I could have been when I was their age.
Well,
it was not, you know, I was in high school in the early 70s in New Jersey, just outside New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not imagine a world like this. It was absolutely unimaginable to me. Like everything in my being was just like, I need to keep this tamped down as far as I can and just hide it away, you know, and to see people living freely and out and in pursuing relationships and learning and growing in ways that they, it's a fabulous thing if you're open to it, to watch it instead of being jealous of it or
judgmental.
You know, you're judgmental.
Yeah.
To get close to that and experience it is an amazing thing.
Yeah, I honestly, I was just thinking about how, like, I guess, like, larger people in power want to pit generations against each other.
The generational war. Oh my God. I love this topic.
I do too. We'll talk about it another time. I just, as you were talking, I do have another question for you. I'm dying to ask, but like as you were saying that, I was just like, man, as a millennial, I'm pitted against Gen Z all the time. And I personally love Gen Z.
Right. Gen Z is amazing.
They don't love me because I'm not cool and I have a side part, but that's okay with me. I don't need them to think I'm cool.
Hey, your side part is adorable. Okay.
Thank you. I also just need them to know that I adore them. So big fan of Gen Z. They are the honey badgers of the generations. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
The question I did want to ask you though is around like any like non-age specific stigmatizations that you faced while interacting with kink. Actually, before I ask that, can I say, like, are there any barriers you've faced in kink because of your age? And then we'll move to the non-age related question.
Yeah. I mean, certainly you begin to feel the, you know, the physical restraints I'm blessed to be in relatively good health. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had a medical checkup, not a physical, not too long ago. And the nurse who's doing all the, you know, intake work like that was looking at my chart. And she said, like, you're 65 and you're not on any medication.
Oh my gosh.
She's like, I never see that. I enjoy that, but still, like, you know, I can't move in ways that I once did. And, you know, physical activity. So there, you know, there's that, but you just find other things to do or other ways to do things. If I can be slightly graphic here, I was at, this is a kinky podcast after all.
Yeah.
I was at a party last night and somebody was preparing to do a scene with me. And in preparation for that, talking beforehand online, they had said, I could tell they were feeling a little nervous about broaching the subject, but they said the part of the scene was I was going to be on my knees for an extended period of time.
Okay. Wait, hold on. Sorry. Mm-hmm. More details, please. Keep going. This is a very verbal podcast, so we want to make sure our listeners are enticed.
Yeah. Orange, grape.
If you need me to record erotica for you personally later, like I guess I need my fee chart.
Catnip, please only tell us what you're comfortable with.
I know. I love it. No. So like they were they were doing as they should, which was wonderful. It was a great example of like negotiating a scene ahead of time, and they asked all the right questions. But they asked that's like, with you're an older person, you're a little overweight, you know, is it going to be hard for you to be on your knees for an extended period of time? Because we can do it differently if you don't know that. And I said, thank you for asking it. No, I said, like, I've found usually that if I have a good cushion, I can, you know, I can do it. And he said, fine, bring your favorite cushion. And
that's great.
And it worked. We had a great time last night. It's that kind of like accommodation. Like that, it's, you know, and this was a young person. This is like a 31-year-old person who thought of that. And, you know, so that goes, I think, kind of the both ways things, right? Of like, you know, as I said, like I try to give consideration to the needs of the younger people, and particularly in being careful not to approach them in ways that can be perceived as creepy or, you know, predatory. For them to care enough to say, like, I want to play with you, but I realize that you might have some, you know, restrictions or things like that. I need to know about that, which are really things we should ask anybody we're playing with, right? Yeah, you know, what are your physical limitations? Do you have any, medical conditions? Like, that should be standard.
And just to hopefully emphasize that point, it's like, this is one of my core frustrations with how we've normalized things in the kink world. It's like, adaptation is the core of, in my opinion, rope. Adaptation should be the core of everything in kink. So it's like, if you can't do this thing because your arm doesn't bend that way, then adapt. Right. Adapt the thing. Yeah. So in your scene, in your particular scene, it's like, okay, that person preemptively acts for an adaptation because I'm assuming they would want you on your knees for as long as possible. So in that situation, the more comfortable you are, the longer you can stay there.
Well, if I can be personal for a moment, a few years ago, you tied me once.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah, it's a fond memory for me. I mean, I got tied by Warm Orange. It happened.
I do rope.
I went up to you very sheepishly, you know, toward the end of the event.
Celebrity.
Like, would you? would you mind buying me some? I'd love to do that. So, and it was wonderful. But like, I wanted to experience a rather tight tie, and you did a great job of, you know, interesting me, like all the options and things like that. I said, no, I want to try that. And we tried it. We got into it, and it was quickly, you know, beyond my range. It was also that. And as I communicated that to you, you were so quick and gentle about, you know, loosening it and getting into the right
snaps
place,
for orange,
things like that.
Snaps for orange.
So yes, absolutely. And but it was just it's amazing because like it did cause me a little bit of discomfort for a short time, but it was still a great, amazing time. It was an amazing scene because I felt like I was in the hands of someone who was caring for me and looking out for my best interest and wanting me to have a good experience.
Right,
and that's just so important.
And hopefully we spread that throughout the kink community, but.
Oh, I was going to say, outside of physical limitations, are there other barriers that you seem to face that you can think of?
They would probably come in the things that anybody might say in the community, just like, you know, the typical things of cliques breaking into, or the cool, you know, you mentioned like the cool kids. The cool kids group, like that's something you feel like, hey,
yeah,
you kind of look across the slosh at them or something that's like, you know, and then sometimes you think like, you know, do I really want to be a part of it? But, you know, I think for me that comes in terms of, and I believe this year I'm coming into, you know, self-management ways of handling this better, but I tend to be an extremely FOMO person.
And again, same.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe as you said earlier, you know, coming, right, fear of missing out.
Yeah.
Coming out of, you know, all these years in the closet.
Yeah,
wanting to do all the things and be at all the events,
and
hearing about somebody. Oh, there was this fantastic party. I said, oh, I didn't. Nobody told me about it. You know, those kind of things.
Right.
And then the voices start in, like, you know, oh, it's because I'm older, or I'm not in with the cool kids, or, you know.
I'm just going to tell you now, no one tells me about parties.
Right.
I never know about the parties. Yeah.
So I want to clarify, there's been like, as far as I know, there's been like 12 orgies since last season, and I've not been invited to a single one. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I understand.
The fear of
And part of that.
No one wants feminist buzzkill at their party.
Oh, no.
Well,
these days I do. Like, I'm kidding. Very much kidding.
If I can say something, because I've been a participant in some of those orgies, which has been like, that's another thing. Like,
oh my God, instant betrayal.
It's like, I'm one of them. I'm one of the cool kids. You can't speak
to me.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm even doing this podcast.
We're not cool enough.
No. If you leave here with yourself feeling amped up, yes, we've accomplished our goal.
Now, it might be part of like the ones that I've participated in. And this is something orgy, me, like I thought I'd never say that in my life, have been centered around the trans queer community.
Right.
And again, going back to the issue of like, they have been relatively shut down because protection, like carefully vetted, not shut down. I'm just the wrong word. I mean, kept close.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, because of wanting,
guarded,
you know, trust issues and things like that.
Right.
So they are mostly happening through Discord communities. Yeah. And I can invite you. I have that power.
Mango, do you want to?
Don't worry.
You're talking to one of the cool kids.
One of the cool kids. You're very sweet. I will be honest with you. The reason I don't get invited to parties is because I refuse to join group chats. I'm not part of any Discord communities because I know if I join one, then I'm just going to get riled up by people being dicks and assholes. And
online communities. Oh,
yeah,
so
online
much
communities.
Fun.
Yeah, exactly. You can't kick people out for just being a dick. So I know if I joined, I'd be like immediately just pissed off all the time.
Yeah.
It is a hard, you know, that's become the method. And that,
right.
I'm glad you brought that up because it is a good topic of talking about how things have changed.
Yeah.
Right?
Good
it's
point.
Become, because 5 years ago, it was just FetLife. And FetLife is a, you know, we can talk about all the other problems of it, but it's a social network out of the 2010s or something that, you know, it doesn't facilitate a lot of things very well.
And it has not adapted at all
Like, I've run one event, sending out messages to multiple, oh my God.
It's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
People have turned to things like Discord because it has so much more flexibility and things like that. And so that becomes the standard, the norm. In fact, I can tell you, like, in one of the events that I'm a part of, you have to be part of their Discord to be invited because it's the way that they get to know you, the way they make sure that you're okay, they see how you interact with people, things like that. But it also means that you've got to, and I have partners who I'd love to have at these events, and they're not can't. Because they feel like you, and I understand yeah. that. They say, like, you know, I don't want an online chat group. Nope.
And the other thing is, like, because of my FOMO, I would want to, like, address every notification I got.
Oh,
and
no.
it would be quickly become oh, overwhelmed. No. I also am someone who, like, has to, like, get rid of notifications on my phone.
Right, right.
And I'm feeling called out here. Yes.
But, yeah. And, like, if I were on a server that just had, like, constant people posting and commenting, yeah. I would, like, I'm a busy person. I just don't have time.
It's there are some survival techniques for that. For anybody who's wondering, you mute the entire server. I personally love it when a server dies and then becomes alive after, like right when, like as soon as I'm ready to get back in, the server comes back. I'm like, yes, perfect. But yes, I yeah. agree.
But then you go back to check it and you've missed everything and then yeah. you like can't really comment. Anyway, it's
yeah.
It's
I've like become a, because I tend to be more active in online communities. I've become a sort of. Lifeline to some of my friends and partners because who would have, like yeah I, you know there's a couple in particular I can think of who have been at events simply because I've told them hey go to the Discord now because right. they're signing up or something like that, so they go
you're
on
the
they do their one little thing they show up that's they did great. The sign up like that and then they yeah. can you know turn off the notifications again and they're done
right
you go. You know it's like being aware but isn't that's such a good point because it's like being aware of the people around you and looking out for them. That's right. another part of what community should be
yeah.
about.
Yeah. I mean, that just goes back to what we were talking about these like networks that we create in order yeah. to both warn and notify.
And, yeah. And nurture
people.
And warn and nurture. All this. Yeah.
And speaking of like, awful transition. Have you ever had any back in my day moments? That's the question.
Oh, God.
Regarding kink, is like back in my days, back in earlier days.
Back 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Well,
not just in kink.
Back in 2018.
God, I really try not to do it because I've encountered that and it's been shocking to me. Not a lot, but I have, you know, where, you know, there's sections, I won't name names. There's sections of the kink community going that have historic roots going back, you know, in the 60s, 70s, things like that, that have very established definitions and protocols. Yeah, yeah. And now everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Well, hold on. So before we do that, I will also like to encourage people to go look up Sex Wars, learn about the Sex Wars. It's in the 80s and it's like the lesbian community, the gay community, leather families, trans people. Like it's fucking wild. I'm trying to learn more about Sex Wars and it's wow. Anyway, it's scary.
Thank you, Orange. Yeah. Please continue, Kat.
So, yeah, that, you know, every once in a while you run into somebody that is from that world.
Right.
And, you know, I think the first time I encountered this was I've only once in my 5 years in this community had a what most people consider like a true collared relationship as a submissive that was established and negotiated and it was actually a collaring where I was given a collar and it meant something to that. But for most of my, and I'm back to this now, most of the things is I call myself poly-submissive because, you know, I feel like I can be submissive to more than one person and it's in the situation and the moment
rather than
24/7. Nice. So, but we would go to events and at the time I had a fairly regular dominant who we negotiated the situation was like the only time that I would be in a submissive posture with him was at a party where we both were present and we had a little ritual. We'd go at the beginning. I'd get down on my knees. He'd put with a cushion. He'd put he'd put a collar on me and I would be his for the evening. And it was wonderful. But we at one of those parties, we had somebody come up and, you know, point at my collar and say like, so you're his, like you know, and use the terms like master slave and things like that. You're his slave.
Oof.
And I said, no. And then why do you have a collar? And, you know, the whole definition of like you're.
It's called fashion.
Yeah. Right.
Look it up.
Oh my God.
Yes. So I still wear, if you see me at a kink social or kink event, I'm still wearing a collar these days.
Yeah.
That's with permission of my mistress, my former mistress, who is wonderful. And, you know, we broke up in a sense, in a very positive way. Mm-hmm, she mm-hmm. recognized at the same time that I did that I was ready to, I had grown and I was ready to move on and do different things. So that's what you, in the introduction you said, like, you know, I'm still her, one. I'm still her pet. My adored one, right? But there's no protocol to it anymore. Like that, she doesn't control anything in my life. That just when I'm with her.
Quite honestly, by the way, there's also a concept called self-owned. I mean, there's other terms for it, but like, there are whole websites where you can buy collars for yourself, and there are whole like. I mean, I'm sure there are Discord servers around people who are self-owned and want to experience the like comfort that comes with like having a collared relationship, and they do it with themselves. And so like anyone commenting on your collar can go sit on a pineapple because it's none of their business.
And I compare it,
that's very specific.
I compare it to religion a lot. It's like religion. Because you have to in fact, I had this discussion once with somebody from a leather community, and I just said, you know, this is like you, at some point, somebody made this up. Somebody created these rules. And the other. They didn't exist 1 year, and then somebody made up all these protocols and rules like
And you can break them at any time.
But yeah, realize that. Like they're not, they didn't come down out of heaven. They're not, you know. So yeah, it's like realizing that, like, have fun with it. If that's what turns you on, that's what you like, you'll go for it like that. But don't look at me and say, like, I can't have a different definition. Or
And just to reinforce Catnip's point, if you look up the origin of the words sadism and masochism, I think it came from two different writers that wrote about, like, erotica stuff. And they became the words because people were so offended. It's like, oh my gosh, this person, blah. But yeah, those things were made up because, well...
We don't have those associations.
Their names were Steve Sadist and Martin Masochist.
Actually,
as is well known.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
Come on, Orange.
Everyone in the King community knows about Steve and Martin.
I thought I was dropping knowledge bombs, but I just kept bombing myself.
I'm not going to let anybody tie me up who doesn't know that.
Steve and Martin. So we're starting to get near the end of our hour. And I just want to ask some like positive questions. Can you tell us about some like memorable events you've had in the kink community in the last few years? God,
yes, can I? Oh, so many that I could choose. I'm going to go more recent. Somebody wonderful has come into my life by surprise in the last month. So I would have identified completely up until a month ago as complete 100% sub, bottom, not, you know, I used to joke like there's not a dominant bone in my body. I can't tell top from bottom. I couldn't top. But Finn appeared in my life, and Finn changed everything. Finn was just amazing, and his response to me was so lovely and adoring, and just looking at me in a way I'd never been looked at by anyone before. And all of a sudden, it brought all these things out of me. When he finally asked, like, can I call you daddy? And I didn't mind, like, you know, I'm non-binary, but like with him, I don't mind coding more masculine and giving him
anyone
that.
Can be daddy.
And it's a very, right. And it's a very,
daddy is a state of mind.
So it's brought whole new things out of it. And it's just, if I would say anything, you know, the moral of the story, be open to new experiences.
Yeah.
Every new person you encounter who's a good person has a potential to lead you and bring things out of you that you didn't know were there. And
isn't that the beautiful thing about this,
isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and cool. Like, yes, you can be whatever you want to be if you just put your mind to it. And if you don't want to be it next week, then you don't have to.
Yeah.
You can change. You can be whatever you want.
I do want to say to our listeners, if daddy is a term you're uncomfortable with because of anything related to gender, you do not need to use that term. I just
absolutely.
I like enforcing for people who are like, I really like the term daddy, but I feel like I can't use it. I'm like, you can do whatever you want. There are literally no rules.
I understand that.
Speaking of which, personally, I have a person that we have a particular relationship, and I am a glucose guardian, not a sugar daddy, a glucose guardian. Thank you.
I saw a meme the other day that was like, instead of using the term daddy, why don't you use the term chef? And I was like, that's a fun honorific. Just like yes, chef.
Oh my God, yes. Right? I actually like that one a lot.
The whole, kitchen metaphor. Oh, yeah, yes. I love it. Yeah,
okay. And just for our listeners, my cat is now attacking catnip, which is apropos. if you need me to remove him.
Oh no, I've made friends with the podcast cat. I mean, that's when you're really in.
He is a wonderful cat. Yeah. He cannot hear anything, so he might yell loudly in a moment.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Just for our listeners, that would be my cat. Apologies for that. Any other memories you want to tell us about?
I think just on the other side of that was understanding the other side of that relationship for the first time was Chris, my liege. Very similar. It's just this whole thing with Finn has been like a mirror flip, because like 4 years ago, I was at an event, started chatting with this guy who was standing next to me during a very boring demo.
Don't you hate that?
Oh, God. And it went on and on. But we just like realized like there was something there and kind of opposite sides of a coin that would match up. Long story short, like later in the evening, I was being played with, and he's watching, and we locked eyes, and this is just what happened to Finn and me. You know, it's like, like him watching me was like, and I went over, and this is, you know, never happened before. Like I went over in the aftercare area, he was just standing there, and I fell to his feet.
Aww.
And then he picked up my chin. This is like, oh, we could have so much fun together. And then he's wonderful. Cause like there were 2 months of negotiations before we ever did anything together.
That's great.
Because he recognized like he said, I've never had anybody go that submissive to me so quickly. And it's like, we need to talk because I'm a sadist and I don't want to hurt you.
That's kind of degrading. I've had sadists say to me, I want to hurt you. I don't want to harm you.
Right.
Oh yeah. I like that one. Yes. Indeed.
So, that, you know, experiencing that from both ends, that kind of like, it's like the old, you know, old fashioned falling in love, that moment of, you know, seeing somebody across the room and realizing, but there's a lot, I would say the caveat on that and the important thing to state is, you know, both on my end with Chris and then now with Finn, there's a lot of talking that has to go on after that. And to realize you know, this really is something we can negotiate this. We come to a mutual agreement. This is going to be good for both of us.
I love it.
Just
the
because
talking
we,
is so important.
Oh, so important. And it's sexy
the best
too.
Part, too. Yeah, I was going to say.
It's just a majority of kink.
Like, if I run into a fake Dom or a Kenny who's like, we don't have to talk about this, I'm like, I'm so bored of you. Like, like you have no creativity. You have no imagination. I'm not interested.
Yeah, sure.
As we wrap up, any words of advice for anyone entering kink, but specifically people who are older who are entering kink?
Don't give up. Stay social. So important. I thought, you know, the reason I was doing all the Craigslist stuff and in even my earliest days in the kink community, I thought it was so much about the physical sensations and like, if I don't get to play, I got to get to play. If I go to a party and get to play, like it was a total waste of time. Don't be that way. I know it's hard. I know it's so hard, but like being in the community, making the friendships and the relationships, and especially as an older person, you need to gain that trust. People just know you and then they want to be around you. Just be likable, be social, be giving, be interested in other people. And that opens the doors to the opportunities.
I love that. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, Catnip, thank you so much for being here with us.
Oh, it was a joy.
Wait. And sorry to ruin the awesome sentiment note, but I have the definition for sadist and masochism.
Oh, Orange.
It's right here.
We all can look up Wikipedia.
It's Steve Sadist and Martin Masochist. You don't have to tell us.
Soccer masochist.
It's Leopold Von. Okay.
Yep.
I already knew it. Catnip, thank you for joining us. Are there sites where our listeners can find you if they want to follow you? Or do you not want to be found? I
mean, which is valid.
After
by
this,
way.
No, I don't want to. I'm going to disappear. No, totally. Like, if you want to follow me on FetLife, I am catnip.
Yes.
With a K, catnip with a K, hyphen catnip with a K. Start there.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, for our listeners, you can find us at Taking in the Scene. I'm sorry. Yeah. Taking in the scene. My God, I forgot our name for a second. Taking in the scene. podcast on Instagram, on FET, we are taking in the scene. Mm-hmm. On Gmail, we are takinginthescene@gmail.com.
Takinginthescenepodcast@gmail.com.
Thank mm-hmm. you, Orange. Mm-hmm. Please reach out to us if you have thoughts on the interview, if you have any other thoughts on future content, please get in touch. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And with that, I guess I have to do a takeout word. So because Denzel's out at his biathlon, I have to do a takeout word.
That's so wild. Like, that's like the most American.
But it's not American. It's European.
It's not all American.
Oh, it's very, yeah. it's Nordic countries is where it's the, yeah. Comes out of the military in Sweden.
Really? Yeah, yeah. It's a bizarre thing. Okay. To take us out, I'll try and say it as sexily as Denzel would. When you're in the bathroom, European, but when you're out, you're American.